Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Finance here at Zacks. I'm your host, Ben Rains, and today we're going to be breaking down Foot Locker's first quarter earnings, and then we're going to take a look at why Lululemon stock looks so strong heading into its anticipated Q1 earnings release later this week. But before we do that, I want to say, remember, if you have any questions or episode suggestions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com. Also, make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. So as I mentioned at the top, we're going to start by taking a look at Foot Locker, which reported its first quarter fiscal 2019 financial results on Friday, May 24th, right ahead of the long weekend. So I hope everyone had a good Memorial Day weekend. Its shares of Foot Locker, which trade under the ticker FL, tumbled roughly 16% at the opening bell on Friday, so down big last week. And the firm posted an earnings miss, so it posted adjusted earnings of $1.53 per share, which fell short of our Zacks consensus estimate of $1.61 per share. It still did climb year over year. Meanwhile, the firm's revenues came up 2.6% to roughly $2.1 billion, but this also fell just below our estimate. So top and bottom line miss, never a great sign for a company. Often that leads to a little bit of a sell-off day of or the next few days. But more than anything, it seemed like people were a little upset about the comparable store sales miss, which is a key indicator for often retail health, even though some retailers today are trying to go away from that metric. It still was up 4.6%, but that came in 1% below Wall Street estimates. So some big misses in terms of three huge vital metrics that most investors are paying attention to around earnings. And then on top of that, what might have scared investors even more is that the company provided weaker than projected full year earnings guidance. The company now expects earnings per share to be up by high single digits instead of its previous double digit forecast. And this comes at a time when Wall Street has noticed that the shoe industry might be negatively impacted in general by these increased tariffs, the heightened trade war between the U.S. and China, which has escalated over the last several weeks. So last week you had the footwear, big footwear apparel companies all over the world, but who have presence all over the world but are in America. You had Foot Locker, Nike, Adidas, and 173 total companies from the footwear distributors and retailers of America wrote last week an open letter to President Donald Trump urging him to reconsider his tariffs on shoes made in China, saying the policy would be catastrophic to, quote, our consumers, our companies, and the American economy as a whole. I quickly want to read a little bit of this. It's basically a press release. Anybody could find this, just for a little context of what these American footwear companies are saying could happen to the industry, just to give a sense of why Wall Street might be reacting a little more negatively to Foot Locker instead of just its own guidance, that this whole industry could be a little bit more negatively impacted if these tariffs really do get into place. So, as leading American footwear companies, brands, and retailers with hundreds of thousands of employees across the U.S., we write to ask you to immediately remove footwear from the most recent Section 301 list published by the United States Trade Representative on May 13, 2019. The proposed additional tariffs of 25% on footwear would be catastrophic to our consumers, our companies, and the American economy as a whole. I already said that. There should be no misunderstanding that the U.S. consumer pays for tariffs on products that are imported. As the industry that faces $3 billion duty bill every year, we can assure you that any increase in the cost of importing shoes has a direct impact on the American footwear consumer. It is an unavoidable fact that as prices go up at the border due to transportation costs, labor rate increases, or additional duties, the consumers pay more for that product. This significant tax increase in the form of tariffs would impact every type of shoe in every single segment of our society. In fact, our industry's trade association, the Footwear Distributors and Retailers of America, ran the numbers, and the results are staggering. FDRA estimates that your proposed actions will add $7 billion in additional costs for our consumers every single year. This is a dramatic increase that would be on top of the billions of dollars Americans already pay as a result of the current tariff burden on footwear imports that was started in 1930. And it goes on and on, a little bit more detail about that. But that was something that struck me. Shoes are already something that's highly tariffed already. So these industry heavyweights are saying that this could really not necessarily hurt them if people are willing to pay more, but that their costs are going to go up, so they're going to have to charge people more is the basic premise there. So I just figured I'd read that note as Wall Street and investors might kind of react to companies in that industry differently over the next several weeks before we maybe we get a trade deal at some point, but we'll see. So definitely pay attention to that. But with that said, over the last several years, companies have slowly been moving production away from China for various reasons. Some of that is due to higher wages in China as they broaden their middle class, trade policies that we've talked about, and then some are just trying to make more goods in their home market. For example, Adidas made 42% of its footwear in Vietnam last year and 28% in Indonesia, with China at roughly 18%. So China under 20%, where you have Vietnam and Indonesia being a way bigger source for making shoes for Adidas over the last year. It's also worth noting that China itself has become a booming market for sneakers from the likes of Adidas, from Nike and Adidas and Puma and companies like that. So those won't be tariffed if they're making the shoes in China and then selling them to people in China. So that's always a good sign for these businesses. Speaking of companies that are trying to grow in China, that's Lululemon, but we'll get into their expansion plans a little bit later. I want to round out quickly just talking a little bit about Foot Locker and what their plans are for the future to kind of help them grow in this more modern retail age, where they have been a company that's been in malls. They have roughly 3,200 stores across 27 countries in North America, Europe, Asia, Australia, New Zealand. But as the likes of Nike and Adidas and all of these other brands go towards their own direct-to-consumer businesses, e-commerce, Foot Locker's had to make some changes. So they've invested in some companies over the last year and a half. One of these is the Goat Group, which we've talked about in this program, but I quickly want to remind anyone who hasn't heard this before that in February, the company Foot Locker announced a $100 million minority investment in this Goat Group company, which is, in a sense, in a marketplace for sneakers. They sell, it's eBay for high-end sneakers, Jordans, stuff like that. This market's really growing, especially in the US and China and in places in Europe. So that's an investment they've made to try to get towards this core consumer who's willing to spend sometimes upwards of $500 on shoes. That's a business they see growing. They've also invested in some other kids-focused brands and women's luxury brands. So that's what Foot Locker is trying to do to expand going forward as malls continue to suffer and the American consumer just kind of changes its scope and where they're shopping. And just to frame the frame of reference for investors who might be considering what's going on with Foot Locker at the moment, as I mentioned, stock was down huge last Friday, down 70%. So if you're looking at their chart, that even in a one-day movement, 70% is huge. So it's down big this year because of that. So the stock is still down now 19% over the last 3 years. That's compared to its industry's average 56% climb over that period. So it's also down roughly 36% from its 52 weeks highs at the moment. So if that's sometimes a sign of positivity for people who want to maybe get it in on the cheap, with maybe people overreacted to this the news of its weekend guidance. So we'll see what's going on with that going forward. But definitely, if you're thinking about Foot Locker, you have to probably wait and see what's going on with these tariffs, as the industry thinks it could be hugely impactful for footwear sales in North America and in the United States going forward. But now I want to move on to Lululemon. And for those of you who don't know, they're trading under the ticker LULU. It is currently Zacks rank number 2 buy heading into its Q1 earnings release, which is projected to come out on Thursday, May 30th. So shares of Lululemon have climbed over 42% in 2019 to crush its industry's 14% average jump. For those of you who don't know, it's a yoga, apparel, and athleisure giant, and it has big growth plans. This includes continued menswear expansion, e-commerce growth. And I quickly just want to run down how the company started to give a better sense of its scope at this point and where it plans on going in the forward in the future. So the firm was founded by Chip Wilson in Vancouver, Canada in 1998 as a yoga clothing firm that's geared at the time towards young professional women. I heard him talk about this on How I Built This Podcast. Pretty interesting. They have a lot of people on that show talking about how they started now what are successful businesses. At the time, he was saying that it was geared towards people with disposable income. Yoga was becoming a popular workout activity for young professionals. And he mentioned that at the time it was still lots of baggy t-shirts and kind of rattier clothes that people would wear even to nice gyms. So he, and definitely nothing that was what we think of today as active wear that's been well thought out and has all of these expensive materials to prevent sweat and all of that. So that was the market he wanted to get in. That's where they then expanded in over the next 20 years. This athleisure word you hear, it's a buzzword, but it really is helping drive the overall athletic apparel market. And they sell yoga apparel, tights, stuff like that for men as well in the $90 to $150 pant price range, similar price range for men. They also now sell shirts, tank tops, all of that. That's a little bit above the Nike price point. But in the more recent years, they're now selling men's and women's jackets for as much as $600 as they're trying to compete against Canada Goose, which is also a publicly traded company, North Face, companies like that. So they're expanding their competitor group as they roll out more and more offerings. They sell shoes, accessories. They're now selling more work-appropriate clothes that focus more on fashion, just like button-down shirts, polos, anything like that. So they're really going far beyond just clothes to wear to your yoga class. Now, I want to expand a little bit about some more specific numbers. So at the end of the fourth quarter of 2018, the company had 440 total company-operated stores. That was up from 404, so up roughly 36 from 1 year. They grew by 36 stores. Most of these were in the United States, with 240 in the United States, then in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Asia, and Europe being their smallest markets. And then more recently, and this is really going to be what Wall Street and investors are focused on, is how the company is able to follow with its new plan. In late April, they rolled out their what they call the Power of Three plan for growth going forward. So I quickly want to just run down what the company hopes to do going forward, as this is their plan to, in three categories. It's product innovation, omni guest experience, and market expansion. So for product innovation, the first thing they want to do is they expect to more than double the size of their men's revenues by 2023. In addition, they're trying to expand their women's accessory business. The company also plans to continue its product collaborations, offer more what they're calling office slash travel slash commute category, which is what I mentioned before with clothes you'd see pretty much anywhere, the pants, button-down shirts, women's blouses, things like that, for more that more office business casual environment. And then they're also talking about how they want to expand their self-care business. And then in terms of their omni-channel guest experiences, the company expects to more than double its digital revenues by 2023. So that's it sounds big, but when their digital business is smaller to begin with, it's not as overwhelming. So that's another thing they're trying to do. And then in terms of market expansion, the company plans to quadruple its international revenues by 2023. They're trying to expand across China as well as the Asia Pacific area, and then the Europe, Middle East, and Africa regions. But they singled out China because that's a market that all of these companies, especially Nike and Adidas, are all trying to grow in as that consumer, middle class consumer base expands more quickly. So just a quick run over of that. They're trying to double their menswear business by 2023. They're trying to double their digital revenues by 2023 and quadruple their international revenues by 2023. So that's going to be the standard they're held to. So that's what investors need to consider looking forward is on any earnings call. Just you need to hear what they're saying in terms of, are they meeting these goals about expanding internationally, growing their digital business and their menswear business. So now I quickly want to look at their outlook for Q1. They're coming off of a fourth quarter that saw their revenues jump 26%, which came on top of Q4 2017's 17% expansion. So big expansion last year's fourth quarter, which includes the holiday shopping period, which is always a good thing. So with this in mind, our current Zacks consensus estimates are calling for the company's first quarter revenues to jump 16.5% to just around $757 million. And then for the full year, our estimates are projecting their revenues will climb roughly 14.4% to $3.76 billion. So slower top line growth than last year, but that's kind of the story. As companies expand, the top line growth gets harder and harder to achieve. So, and then in terms of even farther down the line, Lululemon executives for the last couple of years had set a goal of reaching $4 billion in revenue by 2020. And our estimates at the moment now show them easily achieving that, with our current fiscal 2020 revenue estimates expected to jump around 15% above our current year estimates to reach $4.3 billion. So that's a good sign that they're able to meet these goals they launched a few years back. Then in terms of their bottom line, Lululemon is projected to see its adjusted first quarter earnings climb roughly 29% to 71 cents per share. And then peeking ahead to the full year, our estimates are calling for its earnings to jump roughly 22%. So some solid bottom line growth as well anticipated. And then in terms of why it's a Zacks ranked number two buy at the moment, it's because it's seen a lot of longer term positive earning estimate revision activity. So this is for fiscal 2019, so the current year, and then fiscal 2020, they've seen a lot of positive revisions at the moment. So out of the 14 analysts that put in an estimate for 2020, we had 9 upward revisions against 0 downward revisions for 2020. And then we had 15 analysts put in estimates for the current year, and we had 15 upward revisions in terms of fiscal 2019. And then we should also note that Lululemon has topped our quarterly earning estimates by an average of 20% in the trailing 4 periods. So it's been a solid beat on the bottom line. And then rounding up, I quickly just want to talk a little bit more about some of the company's fundamentals to give people a sense of where the stock is at the moment. So the company also sports A grades for growth and momentum in our style score system. And it is worth noting that Lulu trades at 6.8 times sales at the moment, which is well above its industry's 0.73 price to sales ratio. But Lululemon has greatly outpaced its industry's average in terms of positive stock price movement over the last several years, as we've already touched on. And then in terms of earnings, the firm is trading at 34.7 times forward 12-month Zacks consensus EPS estimates, which we should also note that it has traded as high as 44 times over the last 5 years. So it's well below that. It's a little bit above its median over that stretch. But for reference, Nike, which has been around for way longer than Lululemon, is trading at 27.4 times forward earnings. So 34.7 to 27.4. That's a significant gap, but it's not crazy overvalued at the moment. So that's just a frame of reference for where Lulu's valuation picture stands at the moment. But I quickly then want to close out with what the stock has done. So since over the last 5 years, Lululemon stock is up 280%. Nike's up 117%. And then the apparel industry on average is up 41%. So clearly we can see that Lululemon has destroyed Nike and its industry, especially over the last couple years. And then it opened this morning roughly 4% off its 52-week highs. So pretty near its highs heading into earnings. So not much room to run, but depending on how their report comes out later this week, it could easily climb, because this is a stock that Wall Street's definitely been very happy about over the last several years. But definitely pay attention to what comes out on Thursday. It's expected to be released on Thursday, May 30th, though the company has not officially announced that. Those are our projections at the moment, so that could change later in the week, so make sure you pay attention to that. But that does it for another episode of Full Court Finance. Until next time, I'm your host, Ben Raines, and remember, if you have any questions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute, an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.